Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters with your host, Betty Jo Tucker, author of Confessions of a Movie Addict, right here at www.blogtalkradio.com.
Toto, I've a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore. That's right, Dorothy. This is Movie Addict Headquarters. You don't have to be a movie addict to visit here, but if you are one, it's definitely the place for you. I'm Betty Jo Tucker, your host, and Nikki Starr, my producer extraordinaire, is also on board to help with the show. How are you doing today, Nikki?
I'm doing fabulous, thank you. How are you?
Well, I'm always fine when you're here because you bring such enthusiasm and your trademark technical know-how to the show.
My pleasure to be here.
Oh, I am just so glad that you're my producer. But are you ready to find out what's going on in the world of British cinema?
I am.
Oh, I feel the same way. So it's my great pleasure to introduce our special guest, Terence Doyle, a man who spends most of his time paying attention to the British film industry. Terence is the very knowledgeable founder and editor of BritishFilmMagazine.com. It's a terrific website filled with valuable information about movie activity across the pond. Welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters, Terence.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm very happy to be here. And can I just point out that you're not actually in Kansas or even at Movie Addict. You're in London, England tonight.
Oh, that's right. I should have remembered that. And it's definitely not 4 o'clock in the afternoon there.
It begins to wind down here. It depends if you're on the party circuit. It's only 9 o'clock at night. So, of course, it's quite early, especially by New York time, because I understand you go out very late in New York.
That's true, but no matter what time it is, we're just delighted to have you here, aren't we, Nikki?
Yes, extremely.
And I just wanted to remind our listeners that this is a landmark show because by popular demand, we've extended the time to 45 minutes. Probably that isn't long enough to cover British cinema. But
well, I'm just thinking, Betty, I thought you told me it was 4 hours and 5 minutes.
Oh, we could do that.
We're already being shortchanged, yeah.
We probably couldn't even do it in that amount of time. But I just have so much trouble keeping track of the time zones, and I'm so glad that we got you connected to the show. Blog Talk Radio does a great job of translating all of the shows into every listener's time zone. So, Nikki, that's something that BTR should be congratulated for. Terence, I think you're our first international guest, and we want to make you feel comfortable.
Well, I'm already comfortable. I'm extremely happy to be here, and I think we have to admit that cinema goes around the world regardless of time zones. So, you know, and also even tonight is the perfect hour for me, whether it's 9 o'clock at night or 4 o'clock in the afternoon your time. It's a perfect time to have a chat about British film.
Well, are you serving tea and crumpets?
I just had mine. I eat a little late because I'm so busy editing the website.
Well, that's right, and that's a nice segue into what I wanted to ask you first. I think it would be a very good idea if you would tell our listeners what they'll find when they go to your website.
Well, I think we all have to admit right now there's just such a sudden burgeoning of websites. It's complex for any of us to keep track of them all. There's a lot of fantastic information on the web. My intention, number one, is to entertain people. I just think the movie business should always be fun, a bit like your radio show is. It just enhances the experience. I don't think we all want to go back to school or anything. So looking at
that's a good point.
Well, it's the movie business is meant to be fun. Whether you call it film, cinema, or movies, it's meant to be fun. And it doesn't matter what genre it is. The whole purpose of it is entertainment. So I've made it a fundamental element of the website that I just want everything there to be entertaining. But having said that, there is a slightly more serious purpose in that the site does try to give quite simply a snapshot of everything that is happening in Britain on virtually any one day. That's everything from school programs that are offered to new short films being made to the newest actors to money being spent on the new Bond film or whatever. I like the word snapshot. I mean, it's not movies, but it's camera and photography, and that's what the site is meant to be. Ideally, I mean, if I had all the resources in the world, I would include literally everything that's going on in Britain on any one day. But for the minute, since I only launched the website a year ago, we're still growing, and it isn't possible to do anything really except for now give a hint of the flavor and the fun and the feel of what's going on in British film. But it's going very well, and I think it looks good, and people are fine. I think the biggest thing is that there's a tendency in Britain to underestimate how much is happening here, and the website has the intention of reminding people of just how much is going on.
You update it every day, isn't that correct?
It's updated every day, and I'm taking on new contributors every day, and it will constantly expand. I know many of the people in the film industry from directors and stars and so on, and the intention is to get them to write in the end. But it's a growing site at the minute, like so many things on the internet. So it is updated every day, but it seems a shame if you've interviewed Jude Law to the next day go and bury that interview deep in the website somewhere.
Oh.
So it's difficult with websites to keep all the really exciting stories on, as it were, the home page. It's impossible, in fact.
Well, I can certainly tell you, Terrence, that as an admirer of British films, I definitely recommend your website. I find it so user-friendly, and I especially like your witty style of writing.
Well, that's very kind, Betty Jo. I like your witty style of interviewing, so there we are. We're going to mutual
right.
admiration.
That's right.
It's a lovely design, by the way, too. It's a lovely design.
Thanks very much. I think the reality is we're all still learning about the Internet. Everybody is. We're learning how to make it. We're learning how to use it. And it is a difficulty. At the minute, the site has 60 articles on it live every day, which helps me to at least report something about everything that's going on, but it's still difficult to figure out how to do it. I think if you look at the website for New York Times, which is one of the ones that I used as a basis for designing my site, they face the same problem. You have to report what's happening, but once 10 new things happen, what do you do with the news that was important a few hours ago? And it, basically, people have to be encouraged to search for the things they want, and I think that's sometimes tricky for us to learn on the Internet at this time.
I think you're right about that, and we are all learning, and I know here at Blog Talk Radio there's constantly updating, right, Nikki? And
Yes, ma'am.
Bringing everything, trying to make everything better and constant improvement. So we really.
Well, it's just totally different from. I actually launched my British film magazine project 3 years ago as a print version, and I did a really wonderful first edition. At least I thought it was wonderful. A few other people did too. It was very glossy, very wonderful. It was due to come out every month. I didn't in the end get the finance for that, but the thing is, with a monthly publication, you can have 12 or 15 articles, you write them, they're fixed forever, and somebody buys the magazine, they have it on their table for a month. The website is a totally different animal, with things changing every day, and as you say, I do update it every day. The exciting thing is, it is film, so everything, as I mentioned in the very beginning, is entertaining, and so no matter when anybody logs on, hopefully there's something new and amusing to look at.
Well, it's certainly a success as far as I'm concerned, and I think we should go right into the heart of the British film business and ask you if you have any favorite classic British films, and I bet Nikki has some that she'd like to mention, and I do too. But
well, I'm glad to hear that, because I was going to say, yes, I have some, but my most important wish is I hope you do, because I hope everybody does a few, and it depends on how you define a classic, of course, what period we're talking about, but I think anything prior to 2000 now is almost a classic, but maybe you're thinking about an earlier period.
Well, or when I think of a classic, I think of a film that has sort of withstood the test of time, but it's something that you, no matter when you watch it or how many times you watch it, it's still fresh and entertaining to you. And I guess what is a classic to one person might be a bomb to somebody else. So kind of what I'm looking for is your picks.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. One is I try to remind people that hardly anybody agrees on what is the greatest film to begin with. That's pretty much a given. And one has to realize that out of a lot of people who go to the cinema and they're the ones who choose a movie, sometimes they don't even like what they saw. So not everybody likes all movies. The fantastic thing is that out of every year, there are some that stand out, and you're quite right, they stand the test of time. And my qualification for a classic movie or a great movie is something you'd see again. I see many movies that I find amusing, but I wouldn't want to see them twice. I certainly wouldn't want to see them 10 times. But the great ones, and I could mention an American one like Casablanca, which probably many people have seen dozens of times.
For sure.
It's just always enjoyable. So, the British film industry started a bit slower than the American. It didn't make many notable movies until Hitchcock got involved in the 1930s, basically. And he made movies like The 39 Steps, which is based on a novel and is still a great story, still fun to watch. But it's even probably in the with a movie like Goodbye, Mr. Chips in the 1930s, or when David Lane, who went on to direct so many great movies, but he did a movie called Brief Encounter, which many people are familiar with, and his Charles Dickens adaptations, Great Expectations and Oliver Twist, are still classics. They're almost better than anything anyone's been able to do with the stories since, and they definitely qualify as classics. I think I would say, if you don't mind, is just that my favorite all-time one is The Third Man, which was 1949. It's a Carol Reed directed picture starring Orson Welles, and it was set in Vienna. Fabulous story based on a Graham Greene novel, and I think it is a total classic.
Well, you certainly are in good company when you pick that film, because many movie fans will pick that film as their favorite British film. But Nikki, mm-hmm. You and I have a favorite British film.
I hope it's something I've seen.
I think you've seen it, but it may show that she and I have kind of lowbrow taste, maybe.
No, I don't mind lowbrow taste. You're not going to talk about Doctor in the House, are you? I was coming to that.
No.
I have other ones, too, but this is the one that we have in common, which is kind of funny.
Go ahead and tell Terrence.
Well, it's Mr. Bean.
Mr. Dean?
Mr.
Bean. Oh, sorry, Mr. Bean. All right.
Yes.
Well, I thought you were going again classic. I thought you meant early, but... No, I'm a great fan of Rowan Atkinson. In fact, I don't know whether you remember or ever saw, a couple of years ago, he did some ads for Visa credit cards, I think it was, and I used to never be able to stop laughing at those. No, he's an extremely funny man, and I don't want to scare you, but I was in the most recent Mr. Bean. Mr. Bean Goes to France?
Really? Well, the Holiday is,
yeah, whatever they call it.
It was released as Mr. Bean's Holiday.
Oh, was it? Okay.
And you were in that.
I was in that with, goodness, was it William Dafoe?
Oh,
yes.
William Dafoe.
Oh, I love William Dafoe.
Yeah. So the biggest problem on set, again, with Rowan Atkinson, because he looks exactly like he does in Mr. Bean, is to try and take him seriously at all. When he's not on set, he sort of behaves in a more conventional manner. But even then, he looks like he's sort of stuffing a lobster down his trousers or something.
I think he's just a genius to come up with that character. And he doesn't even need any dialogue.
Yeah, no, it's right, and to get the plot right after all that without dialogue is a fantastic.
And the plot hardly seems important at all. It's just kind of the way he reacts to whatever is happening around him. And I think the reason I love him so much, and I don't think this is your reason, Nikki, but I am a klutz too.
Oh yes.
Oh, I see. We were endeared by his fallibilities. I agree with that. We've all done as he did in Paris. We've missed trains and missed taxis and misunderstood signs and had trouble eating in restaurants. So yes, I think that's excellent. In fact, I presume you did. You also see some of the television shows as early.
Oh.
TV shows.
I love him in Rat Race. I love him.
Well, there was the one where he was leaving his hotel. Well, one, he's signing in signing into a hotel, and he didn't know what to fill in, so he copied the one from the person beside him.
Yes.
Which is.
And I wouldn't miss those Mr. Bean television shows.
I'm going to find him in the next few hours, I hope, and I'll tell him that he's got a few big fans in New York.
Nikki and I.
Oh, yeah.
We definitely. But on a more serious note, I think most of my favorite. Maybe these aren't classics, but they're favorites of mine, and. All four of these films have one thing in common. I'm going to tell you the names of them, and then you tell me what they have in common.
Okay, you take a risk. I'm ready. I'm listening.
Little Voice.
Yeah, I know Jane Horrocks, who did Little Voice.
Alfie.
Yeah.
Yep, Chris File.
Yeah.
Educating Rita.
Well, I think it's got Michael Caine in common, it seems to me.
Oh, she has a crush on Michael Caine.
Michael Caine. Next to you, Terrence.
Oh, thanks.
Michael Caine would be the person that I would want to interview the most.
Well, he is pretty fantastic. I think one of the things that's amazing about him is that he's done a wide variety of roles. He's done everything from playing a scoundrel romantically in something like Alfie in the very beginning to a serious spy in a kind of James Bond mode in the Ipcress File, and then things like school teachers in Educating Rita, and yet at the same time he's the most genial, straightforward, educated, happily married man. And I'm forgetting he did, of course, The Quiet American recently, which was one of his last really wonderful films. Another Graham Greene novel set in Vietnam, which was fantastic.
He was great, and in Little Voice, one of my favorite roles, he played the smarmy talent agent.
Absolutely, and he did it perfectly. Again, it's hard to believe he could do that, but he carried it off perfectly.
That scene between Michael Caine and Jane Horrocks, where he's talking this little shy person into coming out of her room and going on stage and singing all these songs that she sings, like Judy Garland and Shirley Bassey. And
manipulating her, basically.
Manipulating her was one of the best scenes I've ever seen in a movie. And then he actually sang, I think in the last part of the movie, if I remember right, he sang something like It's Over, because things didn't work out, and what a treat that was.
Well, good. I'm glad you mentioned it. I mean, I don't want to harp on this all the time, but one of the things you point out when you say that is that it's the quality of the best film. So whether we're talking about classics, and I agree, Mr. Bean is a classic, as you say, inventing the character is a classic. Well, Michael Caine is a wonderful, most of the roles he's done have been wonderful personas that he's acted, and he's a wonderful person himself. And one of the things I should say, Betty and Nikki, is that it's grand to talk to you, and I'm glad that America has an interest in British film, but of course I am an admirer of American film, and we'll come back to that. So it's not as if I'm saying that we have the monopoly on the most talented or interesting people, but I like to think that we have something to contribute, something a little different, and certainly Michael Caine and Rowan Atkinson are part of that contribution.
And another British movie that I think is a classic is the musical Oliver.
Yes.
With Ron Moody playing Fagin, and that wonderful musical score. I think that that film is would be on my list of 10.
Well, yeah, the musicals are pretty great. Britain and Broadway have a knack for musicals, and certainly the Oliver musical is one of the classics, yes. Hard to fault. So we're getting on to your 10 now. That was four of them are Michael Caine. Who could be left?
Oh, that's right. I'll find the rest of Zulu. I'll find the rest of Michael Caine's movies, and we'll put them on there.
Well, I was trying to think. It was Zulu, and was it Zulu, the early one? Having a memory blank for the moment.
The only one I can remember is Michael Caine.
It wasn't Oliver Reed? I can't remember who he...
I believe so. You know what? Parents, we have a surprise for you.
What, Michael Caine is in the studio?
I wish he were, but this is almost
as good.
We have a friend of yours.
Surprise for you.
We have a friend of yours on the phone. Hello?
Could it be Jane?
It could be Jane, I think, if we can get her. Hello, Jane.
I heard a bit of a beeping, but I don't hear Jane yet.
Hello? Well, this is live radio, so we...
Well, hello.
There
Jane.
She is. Jane.
I've been listening to the show, and it's
hello?
Just... You had to turn your radio
down.
Oh, there you go.
Thank you.
Jane, welcome to live radio. It's fantastic because I have you to thank, Jane, for putting me in touch with Betty Jo in the first place.
Well, I can't think of two more wonderful people to put together, such major movie buffs.
Well, there is a synergy here. There's no doubt about that.
Thank you, Jane. And I want the listeners to know this is Jane Bernard, who is the author of one of my favorite books, Fine Tuning.
And that's fine-tuning as in your life, not your radio. It's a more important thing.
Good point. But
thank you for calling,
Jane.
Well, it's my pleasure. Actually, you know, I'm so enjoying the show because I think British film has had a huge impact on American and world culture, especially recently. There seems to be a trend. I heard on the news today that Sex and the City opened already in London, and it's not scheduled to open here for another 2 weeks.
Right.
And there are other major movies, like the Harry Potter films are coming from Britain. And, Terrence, what do you think this is? Do you think that there is a move to make film more international, or do you think that London is becoming a center? What is your perspective on
that? Well, hopefully it's a center, and I must admit that part of the reason for launching British Film Magazine is to try and elevate the profile for British films, but that's only insofar, basically, to give you my most serious note, I think that films, and many people agree, they're a huge opportunity for change and improvement. The best movies, whether, dare I say, it's Mr. Bean or a Michael Caine film, the best movies can touch people's lives and make them better people, and I would like to see us make, all of us, America and Britain, make as many of the best films we can. And I would just like to encourage, we have so much talent here in Britain in terms of acting and writing and direction. I just would like to see them making more of the good films. And a few minutes ago, we were talking about the classics and the quality films, and there are just so many. I want to see twice as many soon. So.
Well, I think that's a really, really good point. I think that films are really they're educators in our world, and people take them very much to heart. And the reason why classics are classics, I think, also besides that they're entertaining, is they give people hope. They reaffirm faith. They're often about love. They're about core values that are very scattered and fragmented in our lives today.
No, I agree with that. And I think the amazing thing about them now is, in this world where we have internet connections and airplanes and so on, movies are still the one thing that everyone talks about. If you have a dinner party or you're having a drink with somebody, you don't often talk to them about your stock market portfolio or your perhaps even your house, your decor, but everybody's interested in whether you saw the last movie. It still is an incredibly powerful force, but we just want to make sure that there are good movies. And one of the things I always notice about the Oscars is that the front runners are always quality films. And I have to ask why, out of the hundreds of films we make every year, are less than 10% of them really on quality subjects? That's disappointing.
Speaking of quality, I want to know, why do you think so many British actors take home our American Oscars? Don't you want to know that, Jane and Nick?
I do.
Well,
I already know why, because they're better.
Oh, dear.
No, I could give you a simple answer, which I think is probably close to the truth. The roles that win Oscars are demanding performances, and a lot of British actors get chosen for those roles. I believe this, but I'm not going to argue entirely. I mean, there is a tradition in this country of a closer attention to written English and to theatrical training and Shakespearean heritage and so on, which just gives people a slight edge. It doesn't matter whether it's Daniel Day-Lewis or Judi Dench or Helen Mirren. These are people who have spent 10, 20, 30 years on stage training, and they certainly know how to convey emotion, and they're the ones that get chosen to do the big roles, and the big roles are the ones that win awards. So whether it's Peter O'Toole in Lawrence of Arabia, or Ben Kingsley in Gandhi, or Richard Burton in Spy Who Came In From a Cold, or, it's Ralph Fiennes in The English Patient. These are all really dramatic performers.
I think that's a very, very good answer. And you mentioned some of the most gifted actors in that have come from Britain and show up on our big screens over here in the colonies. But I was wondering, who are the most popular actors in Britain today?
Well, again, one of the reasons, at least I shouldn't say why I started the magazine, but once I did start the magazine, I was astounded by just how many quality actors we have. I, living in the country, tend to think in terms, as we all do. We read the celebrity magazines and you get fixated on half a dozen or a dozen names. But once I launched the magazine and started trying to get to grips with the number of actually highly qualified actors in this country, I was astounded. The first article I ever ran was the top 30 actors in Britain, and I found myself hard getting it down under 200, in fact, because there were so many. Well, it's for some reason, certainly celebrity being a slightly bigger thing in America than it is in Britain, your actors are the stars, and your actors are the ones who can open movies and create international hits. Most of our actors cannot do that. But nevertheless, they remain fairly quality people, and I include people like, on the male side, Sean Connery, Anthony Hopkins, Liam Neeson, Daniel Day-Lewis, obviously, Daniel Craig, who's now in the Bond films, Christian Bale, who's the Batman nowadays. But obviously, the names I mentioned, and people also like Emma Thompson, there's now Rachel Weisz, Helena Bonham Carter, Tilda Swinton, who was just in Michael Clayton with... George Clooney. I mean,
an Oscar winner there.
Yeah, they're just fantastic people. And actually, I almost didn't forget about Tom Wilkinson, who was up for Best Supporting Actor. I just think he's brilliant.
You should have.
But the astounding thing also is just how many new people come strolling through. And I hesitate to mention any names because you won't really have heard of them yet, except maybe in one role. But they're just. An incredible wealth of new people coming along who are very happily going to take over from Kate Winslet and Emma Thompson and so on. And
I was wondering what you thought of James McAvoy, because I'm almost of the impression that there are two kinds of movies being made today, those with James McAvoy and those without James McAvoy.
Yes, well, he's around, but you see, like that, I get confused. Now I've omitted James McAvoy from the list in my head, and I quite often get him confused with another chap whose name I'm going to forget for a minute, which isn't very good. But I would just say, for instance, there was a movie out in America, I think, relatively recently called 21, a Las Vegas story about money. But that started a Brit called Ben Sturges, who I just thought was brilliant in that. He was in a movie about the Beatles last year. Across the Universe. That was his breakthrough role. And then I didn't even know of him, but suddenly he's heading up 21. I thought he did terrifically well. But there's many new actors. But of course, again, I always want to give tribute to the Americans, and we all over here love Al Pacino, for instance. Bobby De Niro is still top favorite. There are many people, whether it's even, dare I say, Julia Roberts, maybe not everybody agrees she's the best actress, but she's charismatic to watch. So there's lots of talent on both sides of the pond, I think.
I think you're right about that. I started out not being very impressed with James McAvoy in The Last King of Scotland, but then I found this DVD of a very small, unassuming film called Starter for Ten.
Oh, yes, that's one of the first times I noticed him as well, yes.
Oh, and I thought he just did a brilliant job of getting us involved in the story and making us really want things to come out for him in spite of a terrible mistake that he made. And talk about wanting to have films that make you want to be a better person. That kind of shows what you can do when you're faced with mistakes and how you can be a better person.
Well, it's a very good choice. Again, as a British film, it didn't do terribly well over here. It was based on a book that was fairly well known, but it didn't do terribly well. Starter for Ten he is part of a competition team, school, university competition team, trying to win inter-university matches, and of course falls in love with two of the girls on the panel with him. And you're right, he makes a mistake and chooses the wrong one. But I thought he was fantastic, and in the roles with his mother and the dilemma between the two girls. And by the way, both those girls you see are stars as well. Rebecca Hall and Alice Eve are two other girls who I hardly even think of, but both of them are coming on hugely as great actors.
Well, I recommend that DVD, and I see we have another caller.
Oh, goodness.
Jane, would you want to stay with us for a while?
Oh, sure, Betty Jo, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, and I'm going to, I believe this is Jazz. Is this Jazz calling in to Movie Addict Headquarters?
Hi, Betty Jo. Yes, it is. How are you today?
Fine. How are you, Jazz?
Great. I was about 15 minutes late, and I apologize. I'm kicking myself for missing the first part of the interview, but I will.
So fortunately, we've extended
the podcast and listen, so I can catch that part of it.
Well,
we've extended it 15 minutes, so you're going to get a half hour regardless.
Jazz is one of the followers or listeners of Movie Addict Headquarters who insisted on having more time. So I'm really I'm really glad you're here, Jazz, and you are talking with Terrence Doyle. So what would you like to ask him?
Well, actually, you were talking about the list of favorites, and there was one that, unless it was mentioned in the first half, that didn't get covered. I just wanted to bring up A Fish Called Wanda.
Well, you've hit on my number one favorite film now, because as an actor, I'm quite often asked in castings, they say, what's your favorite film? And for a long time, I used to say it was Groundhog Day, which is still a favorite film of mine. I think it's terrific. But recently I've had to switch to Fish Named Wanda. They both involve animals, so maybe I have an affection for animals. I don't know. But there's got to be some logic here. But no, I think it's a fantastic talismanic film, British film. It's a defining one. And I thought it had a great script, great acting, and extremely funny. And I think it's going to stand the test of time and become a classic.
I do have one quick question, though. It does seem to me that we saw a lot more dark films coming out of Britain before we started to see them coming out of America, and I was curious about your thoughts on that. I mean, things like Trainspotting and I mean, films that really dug into, like, the dredges of society, if you will, and the really desperate lives that people lead. And we saw that coming out of Britain a long time, you know, before, you know, America was still doing a lot more of the, you know, happy-go-lucky, things are just great films, and drama was taken very differently. And in the modern area, the dealing with people, you know, who are drug addicts, who
yes.
these lives of desperation, it seemed like, you know, England was, you know, very cutting edge in that. I mean, and then it got picked up by America. Did you see it that way?
Well, I think it's certainly true in one way, and England has had a tradition of doing gritty movies that started back in the 60s with things like, Alfie, for as far as it goes, or Saturday Night and Sunday Morning.
Oh, I had Alfie on my list, yes.
You know, they were tough movies. And then more recently, Mike Leigh is very well known for doing, and Ken Loach. These are people who do really serious films about unions and social problems and, as you say, drugs and crime. I think, yes, there's an element of that goes on in Britain. I think what we have to realize on both sides of the Atlantic is that, number one, movies are an incredibly expensive thing to make. In America, you have two kinds of movies. You effectively have Hollywood movies, which is run by more or less 10 studios who do kind of 200 movies a year, and they dominate the cinemas. And those, obviously, are not going to deal very often with nitty-gritty subjects. They make movies like Monster, 1 year with Charlie Therese, about serial woman, serial killer, and so on. But generally, they Hollywood movies, by definition, have to be more conventional and appeal to a global audience instead of dealing with domestic problems. In America and in Britain, you have also a smaller scale, the indie movies, the small ones, which are incredibly hard to finance, and they try to cover these subjects, but then they have a hard time finding an audience. So it's difficult to say if it's a trend or not. It's just what gets picked up and what breaks out.
Did either of you happen to include on your list The Man Who Went Up a Hill and Came Down a Mountain?
That's the Hugh Grant film.
Yes.
Yes. We didn't get that far. Our list didn't go that long, but Betty Jo was up to number 8 only, I think. So we had 80 years to cover.
Well, I'm going to shut up and just listen on hold then.
No, that's all right. You didn't. It's a movie I liked. Was that the pregnancy one, wasn't it?
I don't know if anyone got pregnant in that one. It was the two surveyors with Hugh Grant who went and were in post-war going and surveying the entire Scotland, England, Wales, and determining what was a hill, what was a mountain, and measuring this one hill that turned out to be 80
few meters short of qualifying.
Mountain, and all the citizens went up and, you know, like piled mud and rocks to suddenly show up on the map as a mountain.
I remember
just a tremendous film.
Yeah,
right. And I liked Hugh Grant, I think, best of all in Four Weddings and a Funeral. And Rowan Atkinson was in Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Yes, it was a breakthrough part for him in a feature film, yes.
He was the parson that was kind of talking gibberish.
Well, had to get them through the funeral, if I remember correctly.
Oh,
yeah.
Was that the funeral? Yeah.
Yeah.
Not the wedding, that was the funeral. But, while we have you here, Terrence, and I'm sure Jazz and Jane and Nikki and the people in our chat room would be interested in knowing which upcoming British films you're most eager to see.
Well, there's lots. Unfortunately, I'm happy to report. Again, sometimes in Britain we tend to think nothing's happened. Britain is known as a nation that doesn't celebrate its performances very much, but there is a lot coming out still. And they fall into categories, I think. Britain does make a lot of period costume dramas. There's no doubt about that.
Thank heavens, because I love them.
Well, they are, and I there's a lot of criticism, but as some people point out, Britain has a long history, and what's wrong with exploiting it? So we've had a few movies about Elizabeth and the Boleyn Girls and other things recently. So something coming up, it's called The Duchess, which is the Duchess of Devonshire. It's 18th century. A woman called Georgina, played by Keira Knightley, that's going to be coming out very soon. There's Brideshead Revisited, which is coming out. It's the remake of the TV show from 20 years ago, dealing with the post-war period in Oxford University. I haven't seen either of those because they haven't shown prints, but I've seen The Edge of Love recently, which stars Keira Knightley as a lover of the poet Dylan Thomas. That's by a chap called John Maybury, directed it, and that is an incredibly powerful wartime drama of love. There's a new film coming out about Keats called Bright Star, John Keats, the poet, which should be interesting. More contemporary, although still period, there's a new film coming out called An Education, which is based on a novel by the writer, or at least Nick Hornby, I should say, the writer of High Fidelity and other things, did the screenplay for it. And the one that should be of interest to everybody in New York, I hope, is Revolutionary Road, which is directed by Sam Mendes and stars Kate Winslet with Leonardo DiCaprio. It's based on one of my all-time favorite novels called Revolutionary Road, set in the 60s, suburbs of New York, and I think that's going to be an absolute amazing film.
Wow.
Those are historical ones. Guy Ritchie, the man who did Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, has a new one coming out, Rock and Roller, which looks like it may redeem his reputation after his marriage with Madonna and the effort to make movies with her. Another New York film is How to Win Friends and Alienate People, which is based on the experience of one of Britain's journalists, Toby Young, who went to work with Vanity Fair in New York and just basically offended everybody. That stars Simon Pegg, who was the star of Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead, as Toby Young alienated the Vanity Fair people. So we're looking forward to that. And if I can just mention quickly, there's still all the big movies. There's the new Harry Potter. There's the new Batman film called Dark Knight, which is directed by a Brit starring Christian Bale. And there's Indiana Jones, which we can all enjoy, starring Ray Winston, John Hurt, and Jim Broadbent, who are all Brits.
Oh, we are just on pins and needles waiting for Indiana Jones to open up. That's
absolutely. I saw the trailer the other day, and I felt like it was back in 1974.
Oh, I did too. It looks great. I just am keeping my fingers crossed that it's as good as we hope that it will be. Well, what a terrific lineup of films coming out.
Well, I hope it's as good. And Betty Jo, I find everything with you is good, so I think you'll enjoy Indiana Jones.
Oh, I hope so. May looks like a pretty big month over here. I forgot to ask you, Terrence, about the big British movie that won the Golden Globe for last year and starred James McAvoy and Keira Knightley.
Because Atonement?
Atonement.
Yeah.
What was your opinion of Atonement? That was one that I didn't think was good.
Well, I had mixed feelings again. I was supposed to play a hospital patient in that, and they dressed me in women's pajamas and then decided they didn't need me. So,
oh, no.
I have a personal grudge. But, no, I think a lot of British films and a lot of films around the world are based on books. That was based on a famous novel. Most people felt the novel was difficult cinematic material. Most people felt that Christopher Hampton, the screenwriter, did a great job of adapting it. But it's difficult to make a movie that covers such a long period of time and so many themes. It's you know, The English Patient had the same difficulty. So many people felt the first third of it was fantastic. I certainly did. The whole period set in the stately home was wonderfully done. But then it moved on to other sections, and with movies, you tend to think, well, where are we going now? So it was fundamentally a very difficult film to do, but brilliant to look at, and Joe Wright is an incredibly talented director. So.
Oh, I loved his Pride and Prejudice. That's my favorite.
Absolutely, totally agree. Yeah,
that's
brilliant.
Put that on my list. That's my favorite version of Jane Austen's.
Well, I like the way it mixes up.
We Shakespeare in Love, because I just thought that was dreadful.
You hated it, Jazz.
I really did not enjoy that, no.
Well, okay, that's where we have to trade off, because that was one of my list. But so do we dare talk about Full Monty?
Oh, the Full Monty, well.
I will confess I did not see it.
What about Billy Elliot, Jazz?
Movie.
I have to find something you liked.
I did like Billy Elliot, yes,
movie.
Very much.
Good, let's be positive.
Billy Elliot was just great. Well, I'm wondering if we have anything that... is going on in the chat, Nikki, that you'd like to share with us?
It's been very, very busy, and of course, as it scrolls by, I can't go back, but people are saying right now that they love the Full Monty, and actually, Luke, one of our really young listeners who's awesome, said that he saw a movie that has a great actor, Sean Connery, right, in it, called Finding Forrester. That even though it's an American film, he loves that film.
No, it's a fantastic film.
Yeah.
That was Jazz. That was a fairly gritty film. If you see it or have seen it, yes. Was it Forrest Whitaker who played the boy? Not Forrest Whitaker, but a young black chap, and he's living opposite Sean Connery, and he fosters him through some big problems. Yeah, a terrific film. And Sean Connery is hardly ever done a bad film since 1952 or something. Amazing.
Except The Avengers.
Yes, well, I've managed to forget that one, Betty Jo. Now you've kind of ruined my night's sleep over here.
Well,
oh, dear.
We can't accept Sean Connery as a villain, so...
I may have to get tea and crumpets again.
I know, you're going to have a double helping of tea and crumpets.
I have the scotch, right?
Right. We extended the show, and now it's still time to wrap up, and the time has gone by so, so quickly. And Terrence, thank you for being such a candid and entertaining and knowledgeable guest.
Well, you're wonderful company.
I hope that you come back and visit with Nikki and with me and with our listeners soon.
Well, I think we could do an update towards the end of the year and see just how the year has gone for British film in general and things.
That makes sense to me. Now, it's official.
We will
schedule that. This is Betty Jo Tucker giving a big shout out to the folks at Blog Talk Radio for all their support in connection with this show. Special thanks, of course, to Nikki Starr for everything she does to make Movie Attic Headquarters happen. And to everyone who listened to the show live or in the archives or called in, thanks so much to Jazz Shaw and to Jane Bernard. And everyone who participated in the chat, we really appreciate it. Please come back next time to hear the legendary Miles Kruger, founder and president of the Institute of the American Musical, who will be discussing my favorite topic, movie musicals. And remember, dear listeners, don't let your life become like a horror movie. Protect yourself by going to from identity theft, the fastest growing crime in America, by going to lifelock.com, that's LIFELOCK.com, and learning about the important services offered there. You'll get a 10% discount when you sign up if you use our special code, REALTALK, REELTALK, and it's all one word. And don't forget to check out our movie reviews at realtalkreviews.com. That's REEL. realtalkreviews.com. Now, as usual, here's AJ Daniels to close the show with a song Nikki and I dedicate to all our loyal Blog Talk Radio listeners.
If you knew how much I love
How much I adore you.